You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Kristen Newman, and this is her third interview. Yesterday, she did back-to-back interviews with the LA Times and the New York Times, and the natural jump was The Brian Callen Show. The Brian Callen Experience, the conversations with Brian Callen / Hunter Motz.
Brian, if the New York Times is the gray lady, what does that make us? The sexy lady.
I can tell everyone listening it is the white boys.
The white guys. We're white as shit. But I pretend to be edgy. I was talking about cutting somebody's head off. You know, I was being violent about something. And because if somebody touched my daughter and... Hunter goes, Brian is fake Sicilian, and where he doesn't come from, because I like to pretend I'm from New York originally, which I kind of am, but I'm not really.
You sound like it. Where are you from?
My mother's from Brooklyn. Okay. She was Sicilian, and my father's Irish, but he's from Wisconsin. So that's why I have such an edge, but such humanity in my eyes.
Mm-hmm. I see it. I feel it, and yeah. I see it.
Kristen wrote a book called What I Was Doing While You Were Breeding, and I finished it in my car just as I pulled up. And you're a slut, and let's just start there. No, it's a really funny book, and it was just I really appreciate and love when somebody has the balls to lay it all out in a book and be honest about what you. It was almost like there was this dual personality. There was a code of behavior in Los Angeles because you had to be a professional and you're a successful TV writer. And then there's the real you in some ways. And what's really interesting is that when you're that honest with a book and it's really, really funny, you never look bad, man. You never, ever look
bad.
You always look good. That's what kind of endeared me to you.
Oh, so. That's nice to hear. Yeah, there are the two sides. And I've never been good at keeping secrets. I've never been good at privacy, at being appropriate, at things like that. So I found the right career, thank goodness.
Yeah. But why do you think such a gypsy? Like, you know, you're a gypsy. It's kind of like the memoirs of a gypsy. I mean, you had these real experiences. Going to Colombia, having sex with a almost priest.
Almost.
The
so
outrage.
Close.
The outrage.
How much hotter would it have been if only he had been a real priest? 4 years in the seminary just doesn't make it.
You broke his vows.
You know what? I know. That was very tragic.
But you would always end up crying into someone's neck in an airport.
Yeah, there's a lot of crying, too, that happens. Well, it's highs and lows. You know, I mean, I'm not super... Like most comedians, we don't really exist in the middle. That's not really where we live.
Right.
And so there's the highs and there's the lows. And there's a price to be paid for all of that serotonin. Mm-hmm. And it is a lack of serotonin for a little while afterwards. And so you got to go up the roller coaster. You got to go down the roller coaster. And, that's why we're all on medication.
True sentence. Yeah, as I was reading the book, I thought to myself, I think Kristen and I am the same way. I think that you, as a young lady, you kind of fell in love with the movies and tried to replicate every romantic movie you ever saw.
Yeah, and you talked about Romancing the Stone in particular.
Yeah. I'm wearing white linen today, actually, which is very appropriate. Yeah,
yes,
Columbia
are.
To me almost exclusively means white linen. Like, I just felt like
I wanted to be Karen. I know.
You want to wear white linen. You want to have someone chop the heels off your shoes. And you want to, there's got to be some little bit of danger and
Standing in front of a tobacco plantation, or like field.
Well, in that chapter, first of all, I got to read, there's the part, this is what cracks me up about Columbia. This is, you go, I stopped eating, I lasered, wow. Waxed, debraced, everything. I dragged the Chuck writing staff to the gym at Warner Bros. Every day at lunch. I listened to Spanish lessons in the car. I bought a lot of white linen and turquoise jewelry that I hoped would pop on the golden skin I got for $45 in Beverly Hills. I dyed my eyelashes for a model like Emergences from the Ocean. I procured sexy jammies that lifted my girls up a little higher than they were naturally perching these days. No Colombian gorilla has ever brought out bigger guns or higher ones.
That's how a lady takes care of herself.
And by the way, if you are looking for someone to read the audiobook, Brian is available. He's currently between jobs.
I blew it, though. I just got a big job yesterday. Thank you very much.
Congratulations. I actually just recorded my own audiobook. We just finished it.
Did you read it?
I did. And it was very... I mean, I'm not an actress. I don't know how to do accents, which was a real problem because there's a lot of accents.
For Juan and for the guy from Colombia.
Yeah, so difficult. So I just faked it. But it was... You know, I thought I was pretty excited about how sexy this great big experience as an actress was going to be for my first time. And it ended up, I was like in a guy's guest house in Van Nuys. I was driving there and I'm like, maybe I'm making a porno. Maybe we're acting this book out. Why am I in Van Nuys? And I'm sitting there and it's very confessional when you say I out loud into a microphone and you're like, man, my great-great-grandchildren are listening to their great-great-grandmother talk about how I bled on a Brazilian's face, for example. And so,
was,
like,
by the way, that was great. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Checking where did you bleed from on
well,
the Brazilian?
Well, it was somewhere in between my front and my back. You know, it was a sort of a space in between.
The taint.
It's the ABC.
Yeah, I believe when you're giving birth, they call it the perineum, perhaps.
I'm so horny right now.
That's really sexy. Yeah, I am. But I was reading that chapter, and I'm like, okay, Zach, guy with a mohawk in his... in his recording studio in his guest house in Van Nuys. Yeah. Let me tell you about Brazil. And so we're just, it's very intimate. We're in these mics. So it's alone. And Zach, thank God, the day before had admitted he was gay, so I felt more comfortable. So that was better. And he's very soft-spoken.
Instead of the guy hunched over jerking off in the booth.
Yeah, a little
talking.
Bit. No, I think it was all right. He's a former Mormon. He was a very nice boy. And but after I finished Brazil and finished the story about the, you know, being torn open by the Brazilian, he leans in very quietly and goes, that's called... Red Wings.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And that's when I learned a new gay sex term.
Yep.
Wow. Red Wings.
Red Wings.
Red Wings.
Wow. That's right.
Right? That's right. Vivid.
Yeah, it's vivid. But yeah. It's great.
Turns you out learn it's a lot not of just a things. Hockey team, right?
Nope. That's right, baby.
Nope. It's a whole thing. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Guys are full of that kind of stuff. Although, that was interesting about, because the way guys look at sex and, I mean, you girls, I'm reading this thing. The way you plan, like, even like, you know, I've got a great guy. His wife left him, and I figure let's let him date for a little while. It's all a plan. Guys are just, I don't plan anything. I don't plan vacations. I don't plan. And it drives my wife crazy, but I'm always, for me, it's just like, all right, man, I don't want to get into the details of planning a date or what I should wear or what I should do. Literally, that's done all on the
fly. Brian, do you remember when we went to Chipotle together?
Was that your first date?
No. So I'm over at his sister's house, and you know his wife writes out this meticulous list of what everybody wants from Chipotle,
God,
right?
Oh, God.
Like, you know, really specifies like will there be guacamole, what color beans, all this sort of stuff. We walk into Chipotle. Brian is holding this piece of paper. Like, what is this piece of thing? He like starts off like reads the first item, and then he's like, "Fuck this! Like, just give me some fucking chicken, some beef."
Yeah, let's go. Let's
just
go,
whatever.
Man.
Like, I don't care. And then, of course, he comes back and he's like, here you go. Here's some stuff.
I screwed the whole thing up.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't get enough.
By the way, we spent about 5 minutes in Chipotle and about 45 minutes in the wine store trying to find a decent bottle of red wine in Toluca Lake.
I'm a freak for wine. Well, that's and the fights I've gotten into over the years of my relationships, especially in LA, I kind of... women kind of, it's very important for them to verbally connect. They want to know what you did during the day, and they want you to ask them what their day was like. Here's the problem. I don't give a shit about your details. Like, I don't care. Men don't care about, we don't connect that way. It's very general. We talk about broad stroke stuff, but the minutiae and the details are how women connect. That's my experience.
Okay, men connect over minutiae and details. You want to connect over analyzing
stats,
a movie.
Sports, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to really talk about like what other things Spielberg did that what blah 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 blah. Like the amount of people I've had to break up with because they want to talk about what else the director did during the actual movie.
First of all, you've been in LA way too long because that's not what guys talk about.
No, talk about a
TV writer. You just went through what every guy. No, guys don't talk that way, and most of the world,
that's
they never
not
talk
true.
That way. They talk
that's
about
not
sports.
True. The content may be different, but what men do is what's called lecking among anthropologists, which is basically they talk to show off.
Oh, yeah.
That's the point. And 100%. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about MMA or you're talking about movies. The important thing is what the guy is doing is this is the same thing as like when your cat drags in a dead bird. He's like, look at the insights that I have procured about Spielberg's career for you. And you're supposed to be like, wow, that's such a beautiful insight you've brought me.
That is so true. And what is it called? It's called lecking?
Lecking, L-E-K.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There you
Hunter
go.
Hunter Motz, ladies
there you
and
go. But it's true. I don't date men who watch sports. That's not a thing I do. Don't? I date men who are people like, he's totally not gay. You're sure? like, I just don't feel comfortable.
Is that because of
LA? No, you know what? I don't know what it is. There's a couple things. First, I don't like big guys. Like, big guys, like football players, like, I don't trust it. Like, they're too different than me. They're
really?
Just like, it's like a different species. Yeah.
Unless it's that big Australian.
Well,
even
he was very lean. Yeah. Mm. You know, I grew up imprinting on like the surfer water polo crowd in Southern California. The football players, it was not the thing. Okay. So that I don't like so much. And so, yeah, that was just never really a kind of a
I love that
crowd.
Her idea of small guys is California water player, right?
Do you have a type? Do you have a type?
Well, I mean, I just got married this weekend, so I'm going to say my type is, you know, kind of a waspy, smiley, handsome adventurer TV writer who comes from... you know,
an English-Scottish background. There you go.
Yeah.
What is your background?
You know, I'm a mutt. I'm a little of everything. Yeah. Little Jewish, little French, little Irish, little Czech. A mix of everything. Yeah, a little everything.
There's a mix of everything European.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I come from two, like, I have the Jewish part of my family is my grandfather, who is now dead, and he became born-again Christian. But he was secretly bar mitzvahed by his mother, who escaped Europe. And say quietly bar mitzvahed him and married a Protestant and said, don't ever tell anyone.
Yeah.
So, but now, you know, my stepfather is Jewish. You know, I didn't marry a Jew, but he's got a Jew fro. For many years, people called my vagina Israel because it was a welcoming place for all people of the tribe. So it's very, you know, there's a lot of brachatai in my life now, even though I'm no longer.
A lot of brachatai.
I'm not Jewish.
Yeah.
Now, when you have a secret bar mitzvah, is there still a Transformers theme?
Yes, you still get a life-size poster of
Jewish
yourself that everyone
signs.
Oh, good.
Our next book is called Jewish Dick. The Men I Almost Married.
On that profound note, I mean, back to talking about the book. The thing I actually really, really loved about this is I wrote for Let's Go for 3 years.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
So, I mean, you know, all of the... I loved everything that you said about the importance of not staying in the fanciest places.
Yeah. I mean, you never... just from all the perspectives, from the perspective of being... if you're single and especially traveling alone... it's all like fancy old people staying in the fancy places, and that's not going to be fun ultimately. But in the shittiest places, also, it's only college backpackers. So for someone like me who just started, you know, just got single for the first time at 29, just, you know, started traveling alone for the first time in my 30s. Everyone in their 30s is home making people, so there's no one out there to hang out with. But if you're going to find them, it's in these mid-range hotels. You know, low end is college kids, high end is rich and married, middle range. If there's any single 30-somethings or, like, late 20-somethings, that's where they are. So you
that's
go
smart.
For that. Important.
Now,
smart.
That you are rich and married, where are you going to stay when
you
travel?
Oh, my God, such nice hotels. Last year I left the country for the first time in 13 years with a man.
Wow.
And my...
with a man.
With a man, yeah. Exactly. And we stayed in such a nice hotel, and I was like, this is really nice. This is really, really great. Mm-hmm. That being said, barely met a local... barely met other people. Yeah. All of the things that happen when you travel alone that transform you don't happen when you travel with even a bunch of girlfriends, let alone a significant other. So,
did you deal with it? You're a good-looking woman. How did you deal with...
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, you got it. You're
Brian plays
hot,
tennis.
You're one hot chick. I don't know if you know that, but that's...
Oh, my God.
I wish you guys could see what's happening with
his arm and his shirt right now.
You know what it is?
Flexing.
It's just from tennis.
He plays a lot of tennis.
I murder
Some people have tennis elbow. Brian has tennis bicep.
This is what an asshole I am. My buddy David wanted to play tennis with me, and I go, you good? And he goes, nah, I mean, I hit. I go, you can't play with me. and I walked away like an a-hole. And I'm not even that good, but I just like to pretend at this point now, you've got to be a hitter if you want to hit with me, because otherwise it's a waste of my time.
Look at these guns. I mean, that's
clearly
a power.
I have a beautiful body. I have the best body. I won best body in podcasting.
Which is a very uncompetitive field.
And hard to prove. Yeah.
It's a very uncompetitive field. For the most part, very uncompetitive.
Yeah.
How did you deal with like all the advances from men? You talk a little bit about it in France and stuff. You're always getting hit on.
Well, if you're any woman traveling alone, this is what's going to happen to you. But it's important, you know, that
you just have sex with them.
You just have sex with them as the best way. Well, there's a story when I was in Argentina. I have this very kind of quiet, reserved friend who I met down there, who's an expat American living there. And she's very kind of a little bit mousy. And I asked her when I got down there for the first time and I was going to go out on my first date with this guy who I met in a tango club who was a construction worker or an architect. I couldn't really tell.
Tango club. Yeah. That's awesome.
And I'm like, I'm going out with this guy. Tell me about dating Argentines. And she's like, well, the thing about dating Argentine men is that they expect you to sleep with them on the first date because that's what Argentine women do.
I don't know if that's true.
Well,
her advice.
That was her advice. And I said, but what do they do when you don't sleep with them on the first date? And she said, I don't know.
So she's obviously
never
always
had
slept.
Happened. They're very attractive.
Wow. They are good looking and very vain people,
that's
the
right.
Argentines.
That's right.
There's
that's
more
right.
plastic surgery, I think, in Argentina than anywhere else.
Brazil, even a little more. Yeah. A little more. So and also, Buenos Aires is different than the rest of the country.
So let me ask you this. What are the different responses when people read this book? Because I imagine that women go through the book and it's very much they're focused on the journey of, oh, how you found out that you wanted to get married like everybody else. And men read this book and they're like, fuck, I want to go sleep with everybody.
Yeah, if I go traveling, women will all be sluttier. I need to leave the country right away. Yeah. It's been a real range, right? It's the sort of like 5-star and 1-star book, which makes me happy because who wants 3 stars, right? The people who come to it, first of all, I set out to write funny stories. I didn't set out to write... a transformative, here's how to live your life book by any stretch of the imagination. I think that when a woman writes a memoir, all other women expect that it's definitely going to have a big, profound journey and for sure tell them what they're supposed to do. David Sedaris has never been asked, but what life lesson are we supposed to take from this story about the talking squirrel?
Right.
Chuck Klosterman has never been asked this. This doesn't happen. I think all female memoirists I'm learning are asked this question. So if you come to it expecting it to be funny, I'm having this, oh my God, it was profound. It was so honest. I learned so much. I want to do things differently. I understand women better, whatever it is. Really excited. If you come to it expecting Eat, Pray, Love, there's a lot of like, all it is slutty stories and God, it took her a long time to learn anything at all and maybe a modicum of maturity.
No, see, I didn't feel that way. I liked it because it was I liked it because it was just really honest. It takes guts to, especially as a woman, with all the things that come with it, it takes guts to kind of go, hey, everybody, I was a nomad. I was looking for something. I had a blast. I mean, there's no apology. At the end of it, it's like I'm trading awesome for awesome. So you had a blast doing it. And what I appreciate about it is the fact that there's a lot of pressure. Forget being a man. There's a lot of pressure for a woman to do the exact opposite of what you did, especially when you're in your 30s. So most of the time, and I don't know where it comes from, but what I loved about the title was what I was doing while you were reading is. There's a lot of pressure. Somehow people don't want you to have fun. They don't want you to have fun. We live in a puritanical society where they go, you know what? Don't be selfish, Kristen, or don't be crazy. You're looking for something that's not there. It's all one big illusion. Like bullshit. You had a blast and you wrote a great book about it and it's really funny. So that's what you did while they were having kids. And guess what? And now you're married.
Yeah, and it all worked out.
That was
out,
so good.
That was great.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
It all worked out. But I mean, I think too, Patton Oswalt wrote a blurb. I don't know him. He just wrote this nice blurb, and I was so happy. I'm such a fan. But he wrote something about it being misspent youth well spent. And I think just the phrase misspent youth is, is an interesting one because I feel like it implies that you can spend the time wrong. That if you are not using the time to be not just prudy, but goal-oriented, with the goal being marriage and children. And, sure, you can maybe take one wild trip, one spring break, but kind of more than that, you're wasting your time, you're being dumb, you're being selfish, you are unfocused, you're crazy, you're misspending your time.
Yeah.
And I feel like, when I was in the middle of all this and feeling like I just don't want what everybody else wants yet, and maybe that means I'm broken, and I hope I want it someday because I do want kids someday, but I don't want it yet, and I hope I want it, but I don't, so I guess I better enjoy what I have while I have it.
Well,
feel like
it's the
looking
truth
back
of your life,
it,
man.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yesterday, and I think I'm going to do it again, I quoted from the Babylonian Talmud.
Jesus. You certainly did. Uh-huh. I'm so impressed. Keep going.
Can you do it in another language?
Actually, I know one of the words in Hebrew, but I don't remember the rest of it. but it says that, there's a place where a repentant stands where a righteous man cannot. And I think that's the thing is that, we all know sort of that the conclusion is, a family and kids. But the point is that someone who has gone and really gone on the journey of exploring the alternative, when they get to the family and the kids, they appreciate it so much more in a way that a person who jumps straight to that never would. And that's what I really loved about.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, and that's what I really loved about the book so much is that, you know, you've earned the decision that, you know, you want a family and kids because you've really explored all the other options much more than I think. I mean, you know, when you talk a lot about your friends who went straight to that, it seems like they're always going to wonder, right? And you don't have to wonder because you know.
Yeah. And you know what? A lot of them are so much more peaceful and happy than I am. You know, God bless the people who found their spouse early and are happy with them and didn't have to, like, search and wonder and all of that.
I call those people civilians.
Yeah, right? I mean, they seem happy. They for sure know how they feel about their mother. They know how they feel about God. They know a lot of things for sure that I don't know. And I am jealous of those people. But that's not who I am. And I hope that people who you know, don't easily fall into that too, you know, if there is any small message from this book, because I'm a female memoirist and I'm supposed to have one of those, it's that your life is your life and it's not necessarily like the time you're wasting before it starts because you got married. You know, I didn't toss my bouquet at my wedding because that whole concept of like everyone scratch each other's face off to get to that thing that will pick you as the one whose life will start next. Just grim.
Well, I think that's biology. I think that we've just evolved to women have to hurry up and get that done.
Yeah.
You got to get those kids out.
Yeah, but they don't.
Well, I mean,
that's the thing. A lot of, I mean, you know, there's the sort of the idea of like that women have to have kids by a certain age. But when you actually, there was an article that came out a couple of years ago where they did research on this stuff. It turns out that most of those ideas that like, oh, you know, your kids are going to be messed up if you have kids past a certain age. A lot of that dates from like the 1800s.
I mean, a woman, you know, they
like
eggs
that.
And the woman. You know,
no, but
happens.
That's the whole point. A lot of that stuff is myth.
Yeah.
There's actually not a lot of evidence to back that
it's
stuff
more,
up.
But it's also the idea, and you talk about it in the book, is when you're in your 20s and you're young and delicious, you're supposed to date successful men in their 30s. You're supposed to find a successful man in his 30s who then, you know, he's the... There's just all that. Use the commodity you have now because it's shiny and tight and smooth.
And it's going to go
men,
away.
Yeah, yeah. And men... there's all that stuff. It might go away and then it just gets crazy. I see it.
Yeah.
I see it with women.
But are you saying...
I walk around, look at me, I'm a prize.
It's incredible.
always bring it back to me.
Those Christmas. Young, juicy 20-year-olds are throwing themselves at you, obviously.
I thought you were describing me.
Okay.
But Jane Lynch, who's a friend of mine and Patton's friend of mine, Chris Newman's tales of wanderlust are at turns hilarious, embarrassing, and then truly inspiring. Her thrilling escapades make me want to get up off the couch and book a ticket to some exotic locale for a sexy adventure of my own, but I probably won't, and neither will you. Just read the book. And then Patton Oswalt. To me, I worked on Mad TV with Patton, and I think he's one of the funniest people I've ever met.
He's incredible.
Kristen Newman explodes the idea of the single scene into 1,000 tiny fragments and scatters them globally. This is misspent youth, well spent.
God and bless him. We just had the same book agent. He sent him my book, and he wrote a nice blurb. I don't even know him.
He's
what
a
good guy. I love that guy.
He's a goddamn good human.
I love that guy. I know. Yeah, it's been really nice to have such good response from such funny people.
Do you think you have another book in you?
Well, you know, what am I going to write about, right? Because we'll see what it is. It might need to be called fiction this time, which, God, my mother asked me to do for this one. She's like, just call it a novel. You know, like Pam Houston, who I love, she wrote books like Contents May Have Shifted and Cowboys Are My Weakness. She writes, you know, she's a kind of wild, much more outdoorsy adventurer with men than I am, a little more Hemingway. But she writes these books, and she calls everyone novels, and everyone is clearly a journal. And she just calls it a novel. My mom's like, "You can just do that."
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know.
No, I think it would have lost its.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something
I like reading.
I like reading David Sedaris's, who I love. You know, nonfiction more than his fiction, and he's so funny in his fiction. But I'm not engaged in the same way because I'm not picturing this particular neurotic writer naked at a, you know, at a nudist
colony.
Or
when he was a kid, that obsessive compulsive licking the doorknobs on the way to, you know, back from school.
Well, as Diablo Cody said, Kristen Newman reminds me of David Sedaris, but with more joy.
Oh, did she? Oh my gosh, I didn't put that on the cover of my book.
Wait a minute. Somehow that's on the cover.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I just wanted to invoke that name so much.
When Kristen said that, she brought her hand demurely to her
mouth. Oh my goodness.
Oh,
really? You shouldn't have said that, Diablo.
What is he? Do you see? I always think that in a way, as you're taking these travels in your 30s and you're having all these adventures, and they are adventures, and going off alone. Did you ever have an idea? Is there a woman you've always wanted to be from the movies? Is there someone you've always wanted to be? If you could trade places with somebody, who would it be? And why?
Well, that's a really good question. That's a really, you know, for some reason, just because I've used the phrase "Queen of the Desert" quite a bit, and it's my shorthand for when I want to go have like go by myself on an adventure. Like I'll bring my girls with me somewhere, but then I make them go home, and then I stay an extra week so I can have my quote unquote "Queen of the Desert" stories. I can't even remember the name of the woman whose autobiography was called "Queen of the Desert," but she was like doing amazing things in Africa. Can't even remember.
You were a transvestite in Australia.
No, different. No. Different. Totally different. Queen of the Desert. Okay. Totally different. I'm picturing also, out of Africa and lovely Meryl Streep. Like, she was awesome. She wore white linen.
Yes, she did.
She looked amazing.
She did.
Not to mention Joan Wilder, obviously. We got to go there.
What's her name? Heinrich Ibsen or whatever. That's a great book, Out of Africa.
Well, what's her name? Yeah, she's Danish.
Isaac Dennison. Isaac Dennison.
No, isn't it Blixen? Catherine Blixen.
No, I think it was Isaac Dennison. Mm. She wrote Out of Africa.
Well, let's find out, Brian. There's the internet for a reason.
We'll look into it. I'm almost positive. But it's a great book, man. So maybe you still have that sort of idea of being walking out in the morning with your white linen flowing and looking at your grounds, surveying your grounds.
Well, sure.
Being mean to your servants?
No, I don't like the servant concept. Mm. I am more the dream that I had for a long time was the sort of señorita of the Pampas, you know, which is a little bit, I guess, there's servants and grounds there. So never mind. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, you can chalk it all up to imagination. That's why you're a writer. You've written on some great shows.
Thank you.
How I Met Your Mother.
Sure.
That 70s show.
Sure, 7 years there.
Chuck. 7 years on that 70s show.
Yep, forever and ever.
Wow.
Yeah, a long, long time.
Chuck.
Mm-hmm, 2 years there. Great show. That was great. Loved that time.
Damn, you've had a good career.
That was my first time ever getting to write like Dirty Harry lines over a gun on Chuck. That was fun. That was a good time.
So, Brian, it turns out we're both right. Isaac Dennison was the pen name of Baroness Karen von Blixen-Finnecke.
Oh,
so there you go.
There you have it. Good
to know.
Of
course, Hunter would know the real writer.
That's
damn it.
Do you know who else I really wanted to be? There's a book called Shutter Babe by this writer named Deborah Kagan, and she was a war journalist. But her book is structured in that every chapter is, you know, covering Afghanistan, and she's on the back of the truck, you know, with the Mujahideen going into the mountains, and she's talking about, the French photojournalist she fucked the night before. So, like, every chapter is, like, the dude and the war-torn place, and except for the fact that I just, like, don't really want to be in a war-torn place.
Yeah.
I would like to be her.
But
she's
you would
awesome.
Like the stories of the war-torn place, which is the interesting thing, I think, about all of this stuff is Brian, we've sort of talked about this before. How much of sexual adventuring do you think is about the story you get to tell the next day?
Hmm. I don't know, but I had a lot of sexual adventure. I also grew up all over the world till I was 14. And so did you. I mean, you know, we lived overseas mostly in the developing world and stuff like that, but I got a lot of the travel out of my system. I kind of was always longed as a kid because I was literally moved. I never put anything on a wall until I was 30. Bought my first house in 1999 or 2000. It was the first time I kind of put something on a wall. And I realized I'd never lived. I was 30. I think it was 30. And I'd never lived anywhere for more than 2 years. Anywhere. Maybe even a year. I mean, you know, the same place. So that was a real adjustment for me. But I wonder if that need for new experiences that I had to, that was thrust on me as a kid, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. But I really always loved the idea of a new relationship and a new adventure and a new kind of thing. So I wonder if it's the story. I know my friends used to make fun of me because anytime I hooked up with a girl, I would always make a connection. Mm-hmm. I would always, like, I'd be the guy talking to her and really, like, I'd fall in love. For whatever it was worth, you know, I had some success as a single guy trying to get girls in my bed, but it had more to do with the fact that you're looking at me and I have a beautiful body. We already talked about that.
Yeah.
But it has way more to do with that, the fact that I think that I really, in the moment, I really like them. And I like women. I was never like the idea of a conquest. It was more the idea of I like her and I'm connecting with her. Like I have friends, I won't mention their names, but I remember this making so much fun of me, just going, dude, stop. You know, you fall in love. You guys are connecting and you're having these long conversations. But that was the fun of it. That was like, that was the... You know, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I didn't hear a word you're saying. I'm only looking at your arms. I'm so sorry.
No, you got lost in my eyes and my arms.
Yeah,
that's exactly it. And the first sentence of the book is, "I'm not a slut in the United States of America," which is true. And it's not because I'm afraid of people judging me here. It's because I really a one night stand really has no interest. Like I really do like to have several dates before terrible things happen with someone generally.
Yeah.
But when I'm in another country, only have a few days, right? Mm-hmm. So the goal when I go to another country, when I used to go to other countries when I was single, was not to like hook up. It was to find someone, fall madly in love for a week, have him invite me to his friends' parties, take me to the local restaurants, take me to the local bars, end up at his mother's birthday party in the backyard with the barbecue, you know, like have the experience.
Yeah.
Because my obsession that I also talk about in the book is that I love to do the thing you're supposed to do in the place you're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
And that a romance with a local just feels to me like the apex of that experience. Like,
yes.
Because you can get brought into the locals. And again, back to the nice hotels, like, you know, if you rent an apartment and spend a week, that's what I would much rather do than move every couple days from nice hotel to nice hotel.
Right.
And pretend you live there, get your cell phone and meet the people. And a romance, you know, all I want is for the guy to call me the next day and call me every day for the week I'm in his country and take me around.
And then never call you again.
But
you're
talking about intimacy. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, intimacy because I got to go home.
You got to get out of
there. That's what it was for all those years.
Well, because you want it. You want it to last that precious week before it fades.
Yeah.
And you can... And
you just get the high.
It's like stepping into a virtual reality. It's
right. You know.
And you say, I love you right away.
Yeah.
You know, you don't do that in English in America.
Yeah,
you don't do that at all because you're like, God, do I want him to meet my mother? I don't know.
No,
like, I don't know.
You.
Like,
Kristen, I love you too much.
I know, but you sell shoes for a living. I don't know.
But for me, you are everything.
I wish you had a job.
I know, but I die for you. I die for you.
Oh, that's great, but you live with poor generations of your family. I can't
know,
even go to
but
your
they,
house.
They love you. They love you too much.
You're wearing little black panties that look just like mine.
But look at my arms. I love that the guy had black panties.
Yeah, same exact ones I was wearing.
He was into, this is how she writes, she goes, he was into weird stuff, quote unquote, butt stuff. I'm not. Butt stuff, quote, comma, I'm not.
Actually, what he said was, you'd like to do things a little bit strange? And I was like, whoa, like what? And he's like, you don't? Oh, por qué no? I was like, well, maybe. I don't know. I just need to know what you're talking about. You do, yes. Strange. You like strange. I'm like, but I don't, what? What strange?
And he threw his belly on the bed or arched his back.
That was it. That was it. No butt stuff for me.
Oh. I've had some, I was
Brian, where is this going?
Well, I was in Florida and there was this Colombian girl that was really beautiful and we had a thing and then she told me, I want to drink your blood. Yeah. Well, she said, I get so into somebody. Have you ever wanted to drink somebody's blood?
Oh.
And I was like, no.
No.
I haven't, you little vampire. I'm not into that. It's just a hygiene thing.
I will say that I have a biting problem, and not just with men. I bit my friend's baby once. Like, he was this, like, 10-month-old little fat baby. And he was so cute.
I understand, laying
on the floor in his little diaper and little fat thighs. And I was like, give him little kisses, and our little love nibbles. And I just bit him. And then he started to cry. Like, I bit him hard.
Yeah.
And my friend was like, oh, God, what happened to the baby? I'm like, I bit your baby.
I bit your baby.
Oh, I'm a biter. God. You can't invite me over. I'm one of those kids you can't invite over because she's a biter.
I do that to my kids.
There, by the way, is the title for your next memoir.
I bit your baby. I bit the baby.
Yeah.
I did that to my kids I do that to them. I go,
you have to eat their faces.
I'll bite your
so cute.
I'll bite your.
I know you. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm gritting my teeth now.
Yeah, I know. I know. I just got married this week. I don't know if I mentioned that 6 or 7 times yet.
I love it.
Where did you get married?
Oh, in Santa Ynez on the Bush Family Ranch. I had 3 little flower girls in the biggest, the tutu dresses. They couldn't even hold hands because the tutu dresses stuck out too far on both sides. I just put them in the dress I wanted to wear. And I just, every time I looked at them, I felt like, I think my face is going to explode on their tutus. I want to choke them from
every,
the tutus.
Every time like I'm in a setting like that where the kids are in these beautiful outfits and you're at a wedding and it's just perfect. prospect in the, and you're on the ranch, on the Anheuser-Busch ranch. I've gotten married there several times myself.
Everyone should.
I always feel like like something terrible is going to happen, like a plane's going to crash right in the middle of all of us, or just wasps, Japanese yellow wasps are going to come and kill all of us.
But Brian,
that's why you're a comedian.
But Brian, that's the inciting incident. What you're really looking forward to is you then saving everybody at that event.
Is that right?
Goddamn right, wasps! I just happen to have this ethyl chloride.
Exactly.
And I just spray the shit out.
I thought you would just swing your tennis racket at the wasps.
Yeah.
Or, take them out.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea. Yeah. You're like, holy, look at his body.
Yeah.
Defending the
He's
wasps
built for golf.
From the wasps.
There were a lot of wasps at my wedding, but they were all Yale graduates.
Just wasps. Your kids will have long bones.
Sucker.
Your kids will have long bones and they won't get cold. And they won't be, but they probably will be closet drinkers.
It's possible. It's possible. Yeah.
And they'll be racially profiled in a positive way.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
racially profiled in a positive way.
Yeah.
So nice when racism can just
work
on your side.
That's right.
How old are the twins?
They're tweens, not twins. They are 12 and 14-year-old boys that I now live with, too. I live with three men now. It's like I always dreamed.
Yeah. Just like I always dreamed.
It smells amazing. My house smells so good all the time.
Guys are disgusting.
Gross. So gross.
You know what? My daughter, I had my 2.5-year-old son, and I was going to clean him because he had pooed, so I had to clean him in the shower. My daughter's sitting there watching us get in the shower. She goes, boys are disgusting. And I go, why? And she goes, because you have penises and you fart a lot.
Yeah. 100% true. You don't change your mind about that ever in life.
No.
You get a little bit, you change your mind about the penises, but the balls remain weird until the day you die.
I can't imagine.
It's just nothing but weird
stuff down
there. Can't
imagine being a woman and being attracted to a man.
Well, we're attracted to men, but we're never attracted to the balls.
Never, huh?
Never.
Wow.
No, not a thing.
Is
and
that
if,
right?
if it is a thing, then it's a fetish. And it's like the girl who wanted to drink your blood.
Yeah.
She finds balls super attractive.
Yeah, I'm not into fetish. I'm pretty normal.
That
about
was actually
that.
The second part. She wants to drink blood from your balls.
Oh,
yeah.
You know what's crazy is if you can think of it, it's on the internet.
That's
like we
right.
can Google that right now and there'll be a picture of someone doing
well,
that.
Well, isn't that
100%.
Like
you know Will Sasso?
No.
Okay, he's a comedian, and Will is one of the funniest people on the planet. And he was on Mad TV for a long time and everything else. But Will looked at me and he said, we were doing a TV show, his show, Less Than Perfect. And he goes, there was a laptop in front of my door, my dressing room. And he goes, dude, whatever you do, do not open that laptop and go to bathtubgirl.com. And I was like, you son of a bitch. He goes, just don't go to that. Don't go to that. It is queued up, and all you have to do is hit enter. Don't hit enter. There. Whatever you do, don't hit enter. And I was like, you son of a bitch. You son of a bitch. And I've never actually been the same. I've never been the
changed
same.
Everything.
Well, you know, Reddit has all of these rules, right? Rules about the internet. And one of them is Rule 34. Generally accepted internet rule that states that pornography or sexually related material exists for any conceivable subject.
100%.
Yeah,
that's
which is
amazing.
Pretty amazing. Yeah.
Isn't humanity wonderful? Yeah. Our variations, our little
our
specific
variations.
Changes that keep everything so interesting forever.
Yeah.
But so you have, like in the end, you talk about having kind of a scrapbook, the way a serial killer would have, you know, mementos.
Mm-hmm.
And do you worry that you'll get that gypsy bug again?
You know what? No, because they're really, you know, a few chapters
before
the end.
I mean, I'm putting you on the spot with that question.
Yeah, no, I really don't. I for sure know that I will want to wander. But luckily, I married a guy who likes to wander too and likes adventures. And he also is, you know, a guy who's like, go have a girl trip, have a great time.
Right.
And so I know I'll keep doing that, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's okay. And there's also, there was that thing that happened where God bless my life. Like, God bless my life that I got the opportunity to literally go, I've done this a lot of times. Like, there's been a lot of beautiful waterfalls. There's been a lot of, you know, romances with foreigners. There's been a lot of me alone on this beach. Like, maybe it would be nice to have somebody here on this beach with me. You know, maybe it would be nice to share this with somebody and come home, not to my cat exclusively, which, you know, you ride that roller coaster up, there was that come down to the cat. So, you know, there was definitely, it took me a long time to get there, like longer than most people, but I did get there.
I think that for me, because I'm always traveling, and you come off stage, and then there's
Brian travels
around
to exotic places like Edmonton, Canada.
As a stand-up, as a tennis player, and as a stand-up, as a stand-up comic. Like I'm going to Edmonton, then I'm going like this month I'll be in Vancouver, Edmonton, and in Toronto, and it's funny.
Go see him play, please.
Go see me play, everyone. We're already sold out in Canada. Thank you so much.
The Brian
point
is huge
is,
in Canada.
That's it. They call me the Kevin Hart of Canada. And
in Canada, Brian is ethnic.
He is.
Yes.
But you know, his mother's from Brooklyn.
Yeah, well,
my mother's from Brooklyn. She's Sicilian from Brooklyn, everybody. At the end of the fucking day, Kristen Newman never went to Sicily. She'd gone there. She never would have fucking left, because that's where they make men with big hands and even bigger you-know-what.
They have huge Johnsons and no balls. It's the perfect man.
That's right. This is Sicily talk.
I can't believe you just told me about that now. Yeah. That is so...
Yeah,
we got balls on us. But I think you get to a certain point where the mystery of all that stuff, like you're younger, you come off stage and you're just... And then after a while, you're like, oh, I'm kind of tired after 2 hours of performing.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
Go home and read the Screwtape Letters.
That's I'm apparently
C.S.
referencing... Yeah, exactly. I'm referencing the Babylonian Talmud, and Brian just wants to mention that he's reading the Screwtape Letters.
I'm reading it a second time, actually listening to it, and I'm going to play... I love this guy's voice. Of course, after I read what I was doing while you were breathing.
Sure.
And as if a guy is recommending the book, by the way, I mean...
That's hard to do.
Yeah.
I mean, when straight men like this book, it feels 100% better than when everybody else...
Listen, when I read it, I was like, all right, I already had an attitude about it. Okay.
Right.
I was like, I'm a guy. She's going to be talking about romance and stuff like that. And I did not feel that way.
I'm so happy to hear it.
It was very funny.
I'm a girl who works with all boys all day long. I have spent... You know, I was an only child. I didn't have brothers. First time in a comedy room, I cried for so many years. Like, I cried for a lot of years.
Oh,
about,
yeah.
Just because they're so mean. They're so mean.
So hard.
But then you get used to it, and you get tough, and you stop feeling, and then you're ready to be successful. And it's good. But, you know, all I would do all day long is listen to boys talk, you know, bitch about girls, complain about, like, girls doing this, girls doing that. And it really made me terrified of being... like girly, of being like the girl that the boys complained about, of like being that girl who was like jealous or clingy
or
whatever it was, you know. And so all I ever want to do is impress boys. Like, I feel like my life is like the like younger sister, like hoping that my older brothers will think I'm cool.
Even in 2014, TV writing is still a male dominated.
It's all boys. Yeah, it's all boys. And so that was also the nice thing about, you know, you spend your day with all of these boys. You're not going to date any of them. All you're trying to do, when I was 25 and this blonde girl with big boobs trying to become a comedy writer, cut off my hair. I would wear no makeup. I'd try to look as much like a Jewish man as possible. You know, you're trying to blend.
A Jewish man with big tits.
Yeah, I'm just trying so hard. And so, you know, everything in this book, you know, it also kind of took getting, like, comfortable in my skin and getting into the business enough that I could, like, grow my hair out and wear some lipstick and feel like people would still take me seriously, that I could talk about, you know.
Why is that, though?
Being
why do
girl.
You think? We were talking about that before we did the podcast. Why do you think that sexuality... Why is sexual energy so, it seems so taboo on a TV set and in a writer's room?
It's not a group of people, generally, comedians, who have ever had sex before they got a job.
It's true.
It's usually you're in a group of men who married a woman who first had sex with them because they couldn't believe someone finally had sex with them because they were all these like nerdy, funny, smart people.
Yep.
And so it's not a particularly like sexy crowd, you know. They're just
it's
like
not.
they're a bookish smart crowd, you know. If they're comedy writers, if they're comedians, they're just like an emotionally destroyed crowd. So they might have better sex. Like that's the
not
if there's
really.
Going to be sex, there's that.
I mean, I do, but then
maybe
most
besides you,
yeah,
not everyone
Brian,
has
most
your arms.
Rules
well, I
don't
use my arms when I have sex.
Except for
always,
Rule 34.
I always lock my hands behind my head, and that's how I have sex, like that, in front of a mirror.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
It's pretty
that's
hot.
That's great.
Yeah. The lucky woman in my life, I should say.
I wish everyone could see you do that dance.
Yeah.
Well, it's
Brian, who do you feel sorriest for? Do you feel sorry for the women who haven't slept with you or for the ones who have and know they'll never have you again?
Well, we're working on a virtual experience for all those women out there over at briancallen.com.
Has Asa Akira inspired
Asa
you?
Asa Akira has inspired me. We interviewed Asa Akira in her book. She's a porn star. But
fantastic.
I want to pitch something to you. I want to read your book. This is my dear
Wormwood. I note with great displeasure that the enemy has, for the time being, put a forcible end to your direct attacks on the patient's chastity. You ought to have known that he always does in the end, and you ought to have stopped before you reached that stage.
I mean, it's amazing. About, you know what those Screwtape Letters are about? Uh-huh. It's a senior demon in the hierarchy of hell tutoring his nephew, who's a young demon, on how to corrupt a human soul he's attached to. So it's rather genius. And I just feel, I suppose if I were to read, I've taken a lot of trips that changed me, that taught me things about myself or the world. Profound things. Nothing profound happened in Brazil. Brazil was just freaking fun. All id, as deep as a puddle. A married friend recently described his trip to Brazil thusly. You do use the word thusly.
Yeah, see? It was supposed to be read like this. It was supposed to be.
It's pretty good, right?
Sounds good. Keep going.
You'd be sitting on the beach and you'd spot the most beautiful woman you've ever seen. But because the beach was crowded, she'd keep getting blocked by the most beautiful woman you've ever seen. I'm struggling with whether or not to tell some of the tales from Brazil. I've got images of father-in-law and future children reading them. People I would not normally tell, but you know what? If I were a man, I would tell these tales without fear of slut-shaming. And the fact that I got to say slut-shaming.
Incredible.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Incredible.
Thank
that you. Was amazing. That's, I should have
you.
Done that.
Yeah. That's my English accent, everybody.
Yeah.
That's my aristocratic English accent.
Yeah. The screw letters.
When they narrate my life when I'm dead, I hope that they have to hire that actor.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, but I haven't done anything. I haven't done really anything to... you know, grandiose to merit that guy.
Yeah, but the great thing is that if you have that guy narrate your life, it sounds grandiose. It doesn't matter.
He was a thin man. He ate out a lot.
But I think you're really onto something. Like, what about this as like a new life philosophy that you write a book about, you travel the world, you're Eckhart Tolle, you're telling everybody how to live. And it is live your life with the idea of who is going to narrate it. Like, create the life... Mm-hmm. Like, always hear the narrator of your life story in your head and live the life, you know, if you've got Amy Poehler, you've got, you know,
Star in your own movie, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, who's the voice? Because when I was in that weird back house in Van Nuys narrating my story, there was a silver-haired actor in the booth next door narrating this World War II tome, and he had this dreamy, deep voice just like that, and he does a lot of serious, you know, things, and he was needing to come out and find out how to pronounce various,
but you're
you know,
a comedian,
like Eastern Bloc countries.
But that's the problem. You're a comedian, so I don't know that voice is so fun. Yeah. I think it's better to be... You know, at the end of the day, I've always wanted to be kind of a brooding, and I think you probably feel the same way. I've always wanted to be kind of a brooding, deep, tortured soul.
You
like
are.
The guy I know, like the Russian guy with his eyes in that awesome chapter about how you hooked up with that Russian bartender. Very well written, by the way. His tortured, dark eyes. I love that. And the chapter, I think, is how I used 9/11 to cheat on my... If I don't sleep with this Russian bartender, the terrorists win.
And in the interest of disclosure, it's the only time you've ever cheated.
Thank you so much, and I do feel terrible about that.
Whatever. I use 9/11 to rationalize cheating, and I just have to hold on. It was a crazy time.
It was a crazy time. We were all just trying to like reach out and create a little love.
I can't blame you for sleeping with that guy. He's a stud, even though he had to bring you through. He was living with four of his, like, you know,
they all live with all of their parents. They all live with their parents. But that's another tip I can give maybe some of your listeners is if you are a person traveling alone in a lot of countries, these people live with their mothers. Mm. And most, you know, there's a few serial killer moms who are like, oh, honey, I love to watch you cut women. But, like, not that many. Like, most moms aren't going to let their children cut you in their home. And so that's a nice thing about Latin America.
Well, that's what happens. That's the difference between sleeping with the French photojournalist and the Mujahideen.
Right.
Like, if you sleep with the Mujahideen, you know who knows what happens.
You are owned
that
by
that. That was racist. That was really
here's
racist.
Here's how she describes...
I don't think that was racist. I think that was an honest assessment of, you know, how the Mujahideen feel about Americans.
What if
you
it was a Frenchman of Muslim descent? What would you say then?
Then it would be totally different because he would make amazing merguez and we would just have really, really good sandwiches.
That is true. That's delicious sausage.
Listen to this chap. She goes, she's talking about this guy. She goes, which brings us back to Alec and his sharp, exquisite Russian features, his floppy, shiny dark hair, his deep, tortured Russian eyes. I met him one night when Sasha and I went to his bar for a drink, where I looked into those eyes and cooed, "Vodka tonica," which is Russian for vodka tonic. I said it with a great accent. Then we took our drinks and found a table, but Alec and I couldn't stop staring at each other. "I love him," was all I could say to Sasha. Love is a way easier word to use out of the country. It's good, man.
Brian, thanks, is your middle name Alec? Is that?
I would love to change my name, my name to Alec.
And he called me Kristinichka.
But it's more when you are from Russia, you are. It's more strong, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not. It can be very.
Brian, why does your Russian guy sound Italian?
I don't know why because I studied in Italy for a long time.
I needed you doing accents on my book. I needed you to come in and do all the male voices.
Bad, like bad.
Brian,
Russian.
The trick to a Russian accent is you have to act like the bottom of your face is paralyzed.
You talk like this, Russian. You talk, конечно, я могу говорить по-русски, очень хорошо.
That's really good, and your face looks Russian, too.
Yeah, you do this. That's actually one of the biggest tricks I ever got about accents is it's actually people don't focus on the facial structure. So like if you want to do German, most people will do like, yes, I had the privilege to serve in the German army between the years of 1939 and 1945. But if you really want to make it extra German, you have to like tense up the cheekbones. And so then you say, I had the privilege of serving in the German army between 1939 and 1945.
Wow, and you also look so much more.
Under lots with the accents, man.
Yeah, but it's that a lot of it is what you're doing with your face. That's how you know.
And it makes you look more like a Nazi, too.
Exactly.
Wow. That's incredible. I wish people could see you make you doing your love dance, and I wish people could see what you're doing is Nazi face.
If only
we need a video experience. If we only need a video experience.
Yeah. That's the great thing about this podcast is it allows us, Brian and I, to really combine Power Rangers style into like one perfect man.
That's right. And showcase authors, authoresses, memoirists, like Christian Newman.
Since Brian did bring up my Dutchness, I do want to thank you on behalf of the Dutch people for popularizing the greatest word in any language.
Did you know it?
Of course. Okay. And every Dutchman knows it, and we wish that more people knew it.
We say it with a Dutch accent?
Swaffel.
Ah, and what does it mean, Hunter?
Swaffel means to hit things with your slightly erect penis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But slightly flaccid, too.
That's slightly flaccid.
It was optimistic if you could call them slightly erect.
It's called a pink helicopter.
Yeah.
You might want, have you seen the video out there? It's kind of it's a music video with a bunch of Dutch guys, and there's a guy who has like about a 10-foot long stuffed fake like penis that's sort of like a stuffed animal penis, and he takes it around town and it like sticks out the top of the convertible and he hits things like the red phone booths with it and things like that.
Yeah,
it's pretty great.
But I mean like
I like
isn't
that.
I mean
swaffle.
Everyone terms, look up swaffle.
How do you say that again?
Swaffle. But it's swaffle. It's waffle with an S at the front. Swaffle. That's all it is basically.
Swaffle. Mm-hmm. I'll swaffle. Yeah.
And they love waffles too.
Yeah.
The next time I'm in a traffic.
Belgians have waffles. Dutch people have swaffles.
I'll swaffle you.
By the way, I'd like the readers to all know, listeners to all know that I was not swaffled. This was just a word I was taught on a boat.
Every woman's been swaffled. No, if you dated somebody long enough, a guy long enough, you get swaffled once.
In the book, that's not where the word comes up. Yeah. I just want that to be clear. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, it's true.
Yeah.
It's very true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a ride, man. It's a good book, and it's a fun book, and as a straight guy,
and it's a great easy read. I mean, I think that's the other thing too is that they're
you really liked it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed
it. I mean, you called me up and you go, "The book is awesome. You have to read it."
Yeah, I really did.
It means so much to me. I'm so happy. Well, I hope people have fun. I hope people.
How long did it take you to write it?
You know, it was pretty quick. I started to write it the month that I met my now husband's two children. I also, the same month, actually, this is a little tragic, my stepmother died, and I have three little half-siblings who are, you know, at that point, were 11, 17, and 19. So sort of in the same month, I got five kids. Wow. And so it was all over, and so I sat down to just, like, get it down. You know what? And the title sounds cheeky and a little judgmental, right, towards people who have had kids, what I was doing while you were breeding. But it came from the fact that I would have these dark moments where I would go, okay, so I'm in between gigs, looking for the next job, getting back from an amazing trip, breaking up with an amazing guy because he's freaking me out because he wants to get married. I've been doing this for maybe 10 years now. Everybody else has, you know, made families. What have I been doing with my time?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I kind of wanted to write it down because I had been doing something with my time. And at the time, as it was happening, it felt like larks. But as I wrote it down and put it all together, I realized it added up to this whole experience of becoming confident. And, you know, what happens when you travel alone is it's terrifying. And you go out there and you're wide open because you're lonely, because you're alone. And so anyone is nice to you, man, woman, or child, which are, there's a lot of them when you're a woman traveling alone, because they're like, oh, God, honey, come to my sister's birthday tonight. You know, they take care of you. You meet all these people. Nothing bad happens to you. You go home feeling so empowered by the fact that you can do it. And it changes the way you walk into a job interview or walk into a terrible date at Starbucks or walk into dinner with your parents. You know, it makes you confident. And so I realized that that's what those years had really given me, was knowing that I could, like, fix my blues, you know, by getting on a plane and feeling so grateful to really my mother, who made me brave enough to do it, because she was a gypsy too, and her mother before her, and taught me how to travel. And it all added up to something.
And your mother has read it.
Yes. Well, she's read 8 chapters. I gave her the chapters she was in to redline anything she might want to redline about the family. And to her credit, she didn't redline any of it.
That's
she's
great.
Not read Brazil. she hasn't read the Dominican Republic, which
she's
gets a little dirty
Brazil.
At the end.
Yeah.
There's a couple, you know, I'm going to have a book reading down in Long Beach where I'm from, which will be with a lot of her friends. And I probably won't read that chapter. But she brought a bunch of her friends. I did this thing called a literary death match. Do you know about those? They do them all over the place, and they're very fun. And they have writers read against each other. And Susan Orlean and Brandon Constantine,
really?
All these amazing writers were doing it. And Diablo Cody was one of the judges, and Stephen Tobolowsky and Molly Shannon, and they judge you, and it's fun.
I love Molly Shannon.
She's so good. Stephen Tobolowsky was the star. He was the funniest of the night, of all of us. He was amazing. But my mom came with a bunch of her friends, and, you know, I think that seeing me up on stage with a New Yorker writer and a poet and people like that, like, helped her understand it was not a, like, tell-all Kardashian sort of thing.
It's a comedy.
That it was
it's
something
comedy,
else.
Man.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And
fun.
Helped.
Who are your, who are the writers that awe you?
Well, Sedaris. I love Pam Houston. I love, I just read Beautiful Ruins. Have you read that novel yet? That blew me away.
Really? Who wrote that?
His name is Jess, and now I'm blanking on his last name.
Internet.
We're going to find it. Internet.
What are your favorite books? What are your 5 favorite books of all time?
Prayer for Owen Meany.
Great book.
Is certainly up there.
He was my wrestling coach in high school.
He was?
For 3 years. Thank you very much.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I feel like he definitely is struggling with his own sexuality and maybe love of boys a little bit. Did you feel at all?
No, John Irving, no.
No?
Ladies
Would you
Man.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I know
Ladies
that,
Man.
But did you read the last book that he wrote?
No, I didn't read it. I would have heard 1 year.
There's a lot of struggling. I felt like, no. It was this one about like a transgender guy who's, you know, constantly kind of struggling with, you know, wanting to be a woman. And I just felt like there's a lot of confessional stuff.
I mean, he's just a great writer who uses his imagination. But John Irving
is amazing. A lot of incest. He writes about a lot of incest, too.
He's just a dark dude in a beautiful way.
Yeah, I love his writing.
Great American writer. Great writer. Great writer, period.
I agree.
I need to get back into John
Beautiful Ruins is by Jess Walter.
Thank
NPR
you.
Fresh Air Best Novel of 2012. Esquire's Best Book of 2012.
Wow.
Audible and Salon Best Audiobook of 2012.
What?
York Times Notable Book of, it's apparently other people like
it
besides you.
Good. Go on Audible right now and downloading it.
Yeah, do that. It's beautiful. It takes place in like 1960s Italian Riviera and also current day Hollywood.
What's it about?
It's about...
Beautiful Ruins?
Beautiful Ruins. Yeah, it's one of those. What I love about it, I love John Irving because he puts people in terrible, terrible situations and he leaves them there for about 40 years. And that's exactly what this book does too, where people have this tragedy happen in 1960, but also magic. And and you see the whole repercussions of what happens to the family over the 40 years. Same thing with Franzen, right? Like you read Freedom and Oh My God Above. You know, you watch these people just suffer and the whole family implode for 40 years.
It's transforming Italy. Why not here? He'd recently come home from 4 years in bustling Florence, returning to the tiny backward village of his youth, imagining that he brought vital news of the world out there.
That's like Brian.
That's Beautiful Ruins. That's me.
Like Brian returning to the tiny backward village of his youth
That's
in Sicily, right,
That's
Brian?
Right.
Yes.
Kind of like The Godfather Part 2.
Well, yes. For me, when I was in Sicily, it was very difficult for me.
What do you do with your face to be Italian?
Nothing, you just look like Brian. I mean, because
smile.
He's, I mean, perfect, you know, the true Italian.
Naughty eyes. It's about the naughty eyes.
You're so beautiful for me because when I look at you, my heart, it makes like...
Well, the thing I also recently learned, because I've always talked about like my, what I've learned on my travels, is basically in the sort of sexual aggressiveness, spectrum that there is out there. That you've got basically Americans on the far left who are just like retards who won't ask for your phone number till 1:45 in the morning when they're drunk enough, right? They're a mess. And then you've got Italians on the far right side where they sexually assault you. And then perfectly in the middle you have Argentinians who like they come up, they throw it out, they're like, "You are beautiful." And you're like, "No, thank you." They're like, "All right." And they go to the hunter. "Hello, you are beautiful." They're like, "No, thanks." They're like, "Great." Yeah. And they go over there to Michael. They just move along.
It's about having a good time.
You throw it out there. They know it's their job to like toss the ball out there. Uh-huh. And if you hit it back, they're like, "That's all right. I'll move to the next one." You know, it's just, they know their job. But I learned from some Italians recently that Italian women are told you have to say no 5 or 6 times before you say yes, or the guy will not pursue you. It's important. Mm-hmm. And so Italian men have been trained by these women to not take no for an answer. And so it's really not their fault that they sexually assault you.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, cultures are funny because women in bed.
Cultures are funny.
Well, women in bed, I've noticed that the closer to the equator, the louder the woman, the more expressive she is.
Interesting.
Yeah. My joke is I dated this
Brian's actually
Cuban
publishing
girl.
A paper on that in Nature next month.
Well, the Northern Europeans, are more staid. It's like they got to get ready for the winter. There's more discipline. Like they're tilling a field.
Yeah.
I dated a pro athlete who was more like just aggressive, like "Let's go hustle." And then, but if you get closer to
in
like,
bed, she said, "Let's go hustle."
I mean, you know, that's my joke. I actually, she was hot, but she was big. She was a water polo player. She had a back on her, and her hands were as big as mine. It threw me.
Brian, I don't mean
big
to
throw and a big dick.
I don't mean to like upset your theory right before you publish.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But what I think that Saudi Arabia is quite close to the equator. And I don't know.
You don't know what they're doing under those burqas.
You don't know what they're doing under those
do
burqas.
Not.
You
no,
do,
I
not
do not
know, sir. I guess I'm talking more Mediterranean and like tropical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like the islands.
Religion
Cuba.
Ruins most theories.
It does. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time. Chris Newman, thank you for joining us. And thank you for writing What I Was Doing While You Were Breeding. And I recommend it. We'll put it on the website. And when you write your next book, you come on back.
Thank you. Thank you for being a straight man who likes the book. It makes me feel good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm real straight. And get all creepy like, I'm straight as shit, everybody. I like girls. Now I'm going to drink water into the mic.
Oh, I heard that.
Yeah, there it is. There it is.
And Brian, where will you be
down
doing?
Down my dirty fucking throat.
Oh my God.
Who gives a shit where I'm doing stand-up?
Well, but just... I was like going to say, doing stand-up / doing readings of Kristen Newman's book in the Screwtape Letters voice.
Of course, instead of now, What I Was Doing While You Were Breeding, a memoir by Kristen Newman.
Read by Brian Callen, channeling the audiobook narrator of the Screwtape Letters.
Naturally, his name was Josh Eklund, and he's an actor. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Chris Newman, thank you very much. And Mike Casmatini, thank you very much for producing and monitoring the monitors. And Hunter, thank you for your green shirt and your Dutch frame.
Swaffling!
Ladies and gentlemen, swaffling!
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show with Brian Callen. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callen Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallen. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallen.com. Until next time, bye-bye.